The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So we start again with some questions. If any of you have any questions about meditation practice or the instructions from this last week. Here, Linda.
So I really liked your analogy of the Indian monkey with the hand stuck in that sweet box, because I felt like I was this little Indian monkey, literally, with both hands stuck in there. One was my thoughts and the other were my emotions. I started with the thought, got into the emotions, and so my question is, in Buddhism, is there an analogy to who is the monkey catcher? Like, is it the part of the mind that wants to sabotage itself, or who is trying to catch me?
So who is trying to catch you? Because you're getting caught all the time, you're saying. Well, it's a little bit dangerous, I think, to assign the responsibility somewhere else besides there. So that's, you know, one of the key things about, I think, the finding the path of practice in Buddhism would be you would bring your attention in to find out what are you doing to hold on? What are you believing? What are you attached to? What are you resisting? What's happening in you? And generally in Buddhism, we don't ask the question who, but we do ask what. What is it? Because when you ask the question who, and you try to get an answer, who is it? It tends to invite a lot of complicated associations about the who, identity issues, senses of self, who we are in relationship to other people, comparisons to other. And most people, as soon as you bring in self, or a who, a person, someone, it gets complicated very quickly. And the Buddha called that, the who questions, a quagmire, quicksand. You start going down the who question, and no end to it. But instead, you can look at the what's actually happening. And so if you feel yourself attached to thoughts or attached to emotions, or there's attachment, the mix of it, the instructions would be here, if you can let go of it, fine. But if it's not easy to let go of, is don't add any second arrows, if you can. Or if you can't do add a second arrow, then don't add a third one. And bring your attention and just carefully feel and sense and be present for the feeling of attachment, the feeling of pressure or tension or contraction that might be associated with it. And just like you would with your breath or with any other sensation, if that's what's the prominent thing that's going on, we bring careful attention to it, and we might hang out with it for a long time, and then amazing, remarkable things happen. One of the things that can happen is you'll understand something about the ecology of attachment, some of the things that are happening that bring it on. You also might find that it begins to soften itself. And it might soften or dissolve in a very different way than if you are trying to manipulate it or had an agenda of what's supposed to happen. And there's something very profound that happens when a person doesn't take charge, the who, me, it's all up to me, I'm the one who has to fix it. It's all up to me. We put that kind of me-ing to rest and just let attention do its work. And let attention feel whatever's going on, the grief. Let attention feel the anger. Let attention feel the churning and clinging to thoughts. And then attention will do the work. You don't have to do it. Is that?
I spoke to you last week after class about the tone of voice that I heard while I was meditating, and it was very, very disturbing to me. It was frightening, actually, because it was so mean. And as I meditated this week, I kept waiting for that voice to come back again. I was curious. And it kind of didn't until yesterday. I had a very, very peaceful moment, my first real peaceful moment in meditating, and I was saying to myself, Stacy, meet yourself. And all of a sudden the voice came in and said, stop talking to yourself. So I'm wondering.
So you were peaceful. In that peacefulness, you said, meet yourself. Because it was pretty special to be peaceful and not have all these kind of concerns and worries and emotions spinning around, and just really be yourself in a simple, relaxed way.
Yes.
And that was new. So meet yourself is a beautiful thing to have said. And then this part said, you know, don't do that.
Yes.
So great.
I was a little surprised.
So that's what happens when you start doing mindfulness. You start seeing how the mind works. And when you really see how it works, then you can start doing something about it. You can bring, for example, you can bring attention to it and explore it. The harsh voice that you felt, disturbing voice, is not going to go away overnight. But a lot of the healing from it, or the settling it down, it comes from familiarity. That you create a kind space for it to appear and show itself, so you get to know it. And as you get to know it and you have a kind space for it and see it clearly how it works, then you won't be so easily tricked into believing it or tricked into identifying with it. And many times the inner voice, the inner dialogue, inner thoughts we have are completely entangled with our sense of self. And so entangled that what we think must be true. I'm thinking it. I am the thinking. But if you can have your mindfulness become stronger, and you can see, oh, there's that difficult voice, that's that harsh voice, the mean voice. There it is, as opposed to, I'm a schmuck, you know, because I have that. It's just that's what it is. And then we don't identify with it, and when you don't identify it, then it's not going to push you around so much. It's not going to have so much authority in your life. And then you have a chance, and it could be that which is most mean is what has most need for kindness. Kind attention. And so what you don't want to do is be angry towards your meanness, like, get out of here, meanness, you know, and be at war. And the more mean, inner meanness there tends to be in people, the more they tend to be split, and there's kind of an inner war that goes on between. And it's very hard to win the inner war, because, I mean, how can anybody win when it's, you know, it's both of you, it's both you. But if you can meet it all with kindness, kind attention, just see it and let it be there. Then I think that rather than winning a war, the war dissolves. And so that's what I'd encourage.
Thank you.
Anybody else here as we start? Clarifications? Questions about what happens to you in meditation? Yes, here in the back.
Just that I feel like I'm failing the class, or I would feel like I'm failing the class, except I'm going to ask for permission to take like 6 years to finish the 6 weeks worth of material.
Yes.
Instead of, because I just feel like I'm kind of working on week two.
Good. Well, usually you have to wait, usually in the week six, I think I said it in the class already, but in week six I make it a very clear point that we are going through this stuff kind of quickly. And some people find it helpful to get the whole map, the whole terrain, because different things are what's most, you know, active for them. Some people, emotions are really what they need to get a handle of. Some people, it's their thoughts they really need to get a handle of. So those weeks, those instructions might be really helpful. But just going back to week one and spending a year on breath meditation is really, really a useful thing to do. So if you've already made it to week two, you know, we'll give you an A in the class. Yeah. So don't get too hung up about doing it right. One of the deaths to meditation is the idea that there's a right way and you have to do it right. You know, this is like one thing where you should just like forget about right. You're just supposed to pay attention to what is. And what we say sometimes is that the kind of meditation we teach is not about having a new experience, but it's about seeing in a new way. And there's something very powerful about seeing. And so, don't use this to measure yourself by, but trust the process, keep it simple. The instructions that I give, when they seem relevant, you can use them, but I don't take all the instructions I have and sit down and meditate and try to remember them all, and what should I be doing now? That'll just tie you up. Keep it really simple. The teacher I had in India, he was famous for saying, if it's not simple, it's not mindfulness meditation. And then I had my traveler's check stolen in India, and I went to him, and he said, yes, you should be simple, but don't be a simpleton. So I think, you know, most of you have probably had an experience of riding a bicycle, and part of the art of riding a bicycle is keeping it balanced. Because if you, you know, tip too far to the left or tip too far over to the right, you'll fall over, and you have to keep kind of centered in order to keep the bicycle going. And you have to always come back to center, keep it in the center. Or if you walk, you know, a narrow plank, like a tightrope kind of thing, if you lean too far to one side, you'll fall in. But you have to kind of stay balanced. So the same thing with the mind or the inner life needs to be balanced. If you lean too far one direction or the other direction, you'll fall in or you'll have some problems. And one of the things to notice is how the mind leans forward or pulls away, how it inclines itself in certain directions, how it, and when we get attached or get preoccupied or lean too much into something, we're too much for something, we want something too much, then we get imbalanced. If we have too much aversion, we pull back and push it away too much, we get imbalanced. And the inner life is best, it works best if we're balanced, if we're centered. And you can actually watch the moving forward and pulling away. Inner life doing that. The first time I kind of saw it was a meditation retreat in Thailand. And I was pretty centered and calm until they rang the lunch bell. And it was a long walk from the meditation hall to the eating place. And I could feel, because I was been so centered, I could see feel the contrast of how I was so eager to go eat, that my body was leaning forward, but like my energetic sense of self or something was projected in front of me. Like I was ahead of myself, you know, trying to get there, thinking about what I was going to get for food. And I could feel the imbalance. And so then I came back and took my place here. And I kept walking, but I kept walking in a balanced way rather than leaning forward. So even in meditation, sometimes you can feel that. You can even see it physically. You can, you know, sometimes people are really into something, they want something, they're leaning forward, or sometimes, you know, they pull back. But more so, you can see it in the mind. You can see somehow the attention. You know, when it really wants something, it kind of leans forward, grabs onto it. You can feel the movement of four, the glue or the magnetic force, or you can feel the repulsion or the pulling back. Very simple, the movement of for and against, for and against. So with that, let's do a meditation. So taking a comfortable and alert posture, spending a few moments paying attention to your posture, wiggling around a little bit, swaying back and forth, kind of settling in and really seeing if you can get the vertebrae aligned, the shoulders lined up, the head properly on the shoulders and the neck. And if you kind of rock forward and back slightly and feel the weight of your body on your sitting bones, and then come to stillness where you feel the weight of your body travels straight down on top of your sitting bones. So you're not, if you're leaning forward, then you'll feel the weight in center of gravity in front of you. And then it's useful at the beginning of a meditation to take some long, slow, deep breaths, feeling your rib cage expand as you breathe in, perhaps your belly expand as well. taking some deep breaths in, and then as you exhale, relax. And like you're settling in, settling down. Taking deep breath in, and as you exhale, softening around the shoulders. As you exhale, softening the belly. And then letting your breathing return to normal. There's no special way that we breathe in this meditation. And with a normal enough breath, then just take a few moments to scan through your body to see if there's some parts of your body that are relatively easy to relax. And starting at the forehead, brow, the eyes, softening the eyes, letting the eyes rest in the socket. Sometimes there's a lot of momentum for always looking and searching with the eyes. And if you gently imagine the eyes are looking down and backwards, nothing to look at, just letting them rest. Perhaps you can soften around the jaws. Some people find it useful to drop the mouth open and then float the teeth back together. And then perhaps you can soften around the shoulders and shoulder blades. Softening around the chest. And softening around the belly. Letting the belly hang forward. Some people find it useful to open up the belt of your pants so that it feels more loose in your belly. And then begin to notice what the experience of breathing is like for you. Whatever way you're breathing is fine, but notice what it feels like for the body to be breathing. Notice the difference between what it feels like to breathe in and what it feels like to breathe out. The different movements, the different sensations. Noticing very gently the rhythm that's there with breathing in and breathing out. Sometimes the breathing is rapid, sometimes it's slow. It's fine whatever way it is. Just notice the rhythm and frequency of breathing. Perhaps, much like you would relax a muscle, see if you can relax the thinking muscle, the thinking brain. Soften and relax around your thoughts so they float away. Maybe every time you exhale, see if you can let go of what you're thinking about in favor of sensing and feeling breathing. In favor of letting the mind become quieter and stiller. And then as you're sitting here quietly being with your breath, notice if there's any movements in the mind of for and against, leaning towards or pulling back, tightening or loosening. And if you feel any for and against, leaning or pulling back, if it makes sense to you, see if you can come back to center. Perhaps you can feel the mind get pulled or pushed, pulled into thoughts and concerns, pushed by what's happening. And what's it like to stay balanced, centered? Not pushed or pulled, not leaning anyway. Notice if you're up in thoughts. And if you're caught up in your thoughts, notice if the mind is leaning or contracted or reaching for something, pulling back. If the mind is sinking or if it's taking off. See if you can keep your inner attention centered and balanced here. Centered on your breathing. It's okay to be very simple. Simply alive and breathing. Nothing to accomplish or or to prove or defend. Just to be, breathing in and breathing out. And then in the last couple of minutes of this sitting, keep your attention, your mindfulness in the present moment with your breathing if you can, or if something else is more predominant, sensations in your body, emotions or thoughts. Bring your attention, really clearly know it, be clear mindfulness, recognition of what it is that's predominant for you. And as you're recognizing, acknowledging what's the main experience happening here and now, in addition to noticing it, being mindful of it, also notice what your relationship is to it, your attitude towards it. Are you for it or against it? Are you judging it or wanting or not wanting? Are you making up stories about what it means, what's going to happen? What's the attitude or the relationship you have to what you're noticing? Then can you relax that relationship? Can you relax the attitude? So it becomes more and more simple. Just mindful of what is. And then to end this sitting, you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So I'll tell you a story of the way that I learned it was that I don't know if it's true or not, it doesn't matter. But the way I learned it was a story about a person who went to his psychoanalyst And regularly, talking to a psychoanalyst, would talk about a dream that he was having. And the dream was that he was stuck in a room that had no windows. And there was a door. The door was closed, and there was no key to get out of the door, to get out. And he would try heroically to push against the door to make it go open, get one side of the room and hurl himself against the door to try to break it open or push it open or do something. And it never opened. He's always stuck in the room. And this dream went on for a long time. And so often recounting it to the psychoanalyst. And the psychoanalyst was listening carefully to this dream, maybe taking notes to all the details. And then finally the psychoanalyst said, you know, I've been listening for a long time to this dream of yours and how it goes. But you know, next time you go and have this dream, instead of trying to push the door open, try pulling it. Pulling it inwards into the room rather than pushing it out. And so he did, and it opened easily. Sometimes we're pushing so hard in the wrong direction. We're looking so hard in the wrong direction for how to be happy, or how to find some peace in our life. And sometimes it's that, what they say in Buddhism is the inward turn. Sometimes you need to turn the door in to find the solution or find the peace or the happiness. And so many people, you know, it's commonly said that many people are looking for happiness in the things of the world. They want money, they want a nice house, or they want a nice job, or they want a good relationship, they want a nice bank account, they want good recreational opportunities. They want something. And there's something out there. And if only the world would accommodate you, then everything will be fine. But to expect the world to accommodate you and your desires is asking for trouble, because the world is constantly shifting and changing. And so to the degree to which we're looking at something, we don't find the solution. And so what meditation is about is about turning the door the other way, and kind of looking in and seeing what is here, what's going on here, and here there's a solution. Here there's a way to find peace and happiness. It's not dependent on having the things in the world be the way we want them to be. And that's a radical shift in how many people live their lives. It's kind of, it may be easy to kind of intellectually understand, but it's really hard, I think, to emotionally understand that shift from looking at the world has to be just right, to discovering that what needs to be set right is something here, inside of us. So we learn that the doors, you know, we turn the door, we swing it the other way into ourselves. So in that regard, we say that in this tradition here, we say there's always two things happening. And only two things, they say. And so you have to be a little bit generous to me as I say this, but there's two things. There's what's happening and your relationship to what's happening. So it's cold. What's your relationship to it being cold? It's hot. What's your relationship to it being hot? You're hungry. What's your relationship to being hungry? Your mind is spinning out of control. What's your relationship to the mind spinning out of control? There's a lot of noise. What's your relationship to the noise? And looking at the relationship, that's often goes unnoticed. It's kind of like the relationship we take for granted. And the relationship has a lot to do with desires, wanting something or not wanting something, or an attitude, and going towards something or pulling away. So in this last meditation, the instruction was to notice, you know, was there some movement in the mind from center? Was there some leading forward or pulling back? Was there some contracting or some loosening? Was there some pushing or some pulling? And if it was, could you come back to center? You can come back to kind of balance. So I'm curious, did that make sense to you? And what did you notice about your mind and how it operated?
I noticed that even when I was coming back to center, I was wanting to be in control of it.
So part of your relationship to even yourself is you like to be in control. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I wonder, in trying to be in control, are you always going to be off-center then? Someone else.
I notice that most of the thoughts that I have are neither good nor bad, just random noise, banana, whatever. And it's maybe I feel some aversion to the fact that I'm having it, but I don't feel particularly, I don't feel like toward or against that.
It could well be. If you're somewhat relaxed, then there can be kind of random thoughts bubbling up. So, you know, probably in that kind of situation, there's not a lot of for and against, just kind of things bubbling up. The mind's a thought machine. Were you fairly relaxed?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then do this exercise when you're not. Behind you.
I found the concept of leaning toward or away or to this one side or the other a fairly hard idea to sort of wrap my mind around.
Okay, I understand that.
Because it kind of it's an attempt to make the mind into an object or something tangible, and I don't think I know exactly how to do that.
If you can't do it, don't know how to do it, don't try. Count yourself blessed. The instruction was not to do that, but to notice when it's happening. And I think that some people discover that when you get really caught by something, really involved in something, some good juicy thought, that something shifts inside the mind. There's a variety of ways it's described by people. Different people experience it differently. It's not like one way it should happen. But sometimes you can feel that, for example, you can, I remember I said this last week, but you can sit very quietly and be very relaxed and balanced and feel your belly moving as you breathe. And feel like in your body, balanced and centered. And then something reminds you of 10 years ago when, you know, something, this terrible thing happened. You know, you were treated poorly by your boss. And just that memory, and suddenly you can feel the waves of energy and the sense of what's activated in your body move from your belly up into your head. And you feel like your head is filled with energy and contraction and tightness as you latch on and get involved in those kinds of thoughts. That's how some people can experience quite dramatically. Or you can find you have a really good thought and people feel like there's a darkening, like gravitational pull, like you're pulled into it. Or this strong pull to want to think. I mean, some of you probably had the experience of being lucky enough to let go of thoughts, but finding the next instant you're back in it. You know, so the, you know, there's such a strong pull into it. And sometimes you can feel physically almost that sense of pull that's there. Some people have the report the experience of feeling like they're leaning, they really want something. They feel like the mind or the head almost is kind of leaning towards. Some people, you know, not everyone's that way. I mean, some people are not so visually inclined or so, you know. So what happens to you when you get caught in thoughts? You know? Do you get caught?
Do I?
Yeah.
I'd say so.
And what happens inside to you? Energetically, emotionally, what happens to your awareness?
Well, when I get caught into a thought, it depends on whether I'm meditating or not, because if I'm meditating, I'm then going to probably acknowledge the thought and refocus onto my breath.
That's very nice. But before you acknowledge it, if you just kind of turn and just feel what it's like to be involved in your thought, especially a good thought that you're not going to let go of so easily,
mm-hmm.
What's happening to you? How's that experience within?
Well, that's a difficult question. I don't know that I have words to describe.
So I recommend that the next time you really have some really good thinking going on in meditation, you know, like you just can't let go of it. It's really, it has some really good juice going on. Don't let go of it. Don't acknowledge it and let go of it. That's the instructions. Just acknowledge, let go, come back. Don't do that. But rather, study the phenomena. and see if you can just discover what's going on inside of you when you're that involved, energetically, emotionally, physically. How are you relating to it? What's the glue? What's keeping you so juiced up and connected to it? And you might learn a lot about yourself. See, if you spend too much time letting go of things, you might not learn about what it's all about. And so we want to be very, we often say let go, but you want to be very careful if you do this kind of meditation practice. You don't let go too often, because sometimes you want to just turn and just be mindful of what is. And that's where a lot of learning can happen. So thank you. So in front of you.
That's the real issue, is that how make the questions to the thought that comes.
So, can you say it again, please?
How you make the right questions when the thoughts come. I'm most likely letting go and coming back to my body and to my breath. And there's some recurring thoughts that come back, and I feel that I start having a hot flash and my breath go faster. And I say, I've been there so many times, I want to go back, so I come back. But I in the middle of the thinking, I forget the questions I should make for the thoughts, so I can analyze the thoughts. And you understand what I'm trying to say?
So I think so. So first of all, you always remember to keep this stuff simple. And in meditation, if you can't figure out what to do, don't try to figure it out. Just come back to your breathing.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, just come back to your breathing. Keep it really simple. But sometimes you might not have, try to figure out what's going on. It's more like, this is happening a lot. I keep thinking this way. Let me just look at this thinking phenomena. Let me just look at it. That's all. You don't have to ask a question. Let's just look at it. And then if you might remember some of the questions I asked, you might remember, how does this feel physically? How does this feel emotionally to think this way? What's my relationship to it? It's interesting. Sometimes you can actually feel, I call it the glue, or the gravitational pull between you and your thinking.
I think most likely it's like an addiction to think of the same thoughts over and over again.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I think that, do I need to do that again? Or can I see this or let go? I don't know. And sometimes I'm dealing with a big gap, a nothingness there, because I let go of those addictions.
Beautiful.
And then everything's going to really calm down. It's weird. It's very weird.
Because you're not familiar with a calm,
relaxed,
happy place.
Yeah, I don't know what is that. Maybe I'm sick, maybe I'm depressed, I don't know. It's so weird.
But you're happy sometimes.
I think I am, because I'm doing the right things.
Beautiful. So it sounds like you're if you're addicted to your thinking, there's a transition where it takes a while to get used to the alternative. And some people go through withdrawals. When they start, because we are addicted to our thinking, the great addictions that people have, I call it the caffeine of the soul, is desire and aversion. And you get good desire going or good aversion going, it's a lot of energy. And some people really depend on that. They never occurred to them to depend on it, but their kind of energy and everything, vitality, is kind of comes from that. And when you start letting go of desires, always operating on desires, wanting, or always operating on aversion, hostility, judging, and being critical or stuff, some people have to go through a period of transition, withdrawal, just like you would with caffeine. And it might take a little while to go through that period. It doesn't seem like you're going through withdrawals, but it seems like you're in a new territory and you're...
Yeah, it is kind of weird too, because I'm not worried about getting to work and what I have to do on that day. It's just happening. It's happening. And I'm doing everything I have to do without... anxiety.
Imagine.
It's so weird. And even in, I have a dispute today with a guy at work, and he started talking to me, something that I said to him that hurt him, and I said, I didn't say this to hurt you, and he didn't want to hear what I had to say, and I said, back off, and I let him just have it, say whatever he wants to say, and I send an email apologizing or whatever, and then I don't know what's going to happen back. But
so meaning,
just
meaning
didn't, I didn't feel in my body that I did something to offend him, you know? But maybe I offend him without knowing.
So you're suggesting that because of the meditation, during the course of the day, you're not so easily caught by the drama of the day. And even with something so dramatic as someone angry with you, you could stay. You didn't contract or worry. You kind of stepped back, just watched it in a calm way.
I didn't want to dispute anything. It just not. I didn't feel that I did something hurting. I didn't feel inside me that I did something to hurt him.
Yeah, beautiful. So it sounds to me like it's great, and it might take some while for you to get used to it and get familiar with it. And as you get familiar with a calmer, less reactive place, you'll develop street smarts. You'll understand how to negotiate your life from that place. And that's not automatic, but with the time you'll learn how you can find your way and through life without having to get attached or caught up or contracted.
Thank you.
Yes.
I appreciated the spatial awareness aspect of that, because when you mentioned to be aware of any thinking, it was like right here, mm-hmm. front left. And then I saw what I did was I pulled back, but I pulled back too far, and I kind of went back, or front, it was front right, and went back left. So it was like, so then there was this way when I kind of just let myself come to the center, where the thought just kind of melted, and I was back with my breath rather than saying, you know, no more thought, go mm-hmm. to breathing. It just sort of, like by finding the centered space, it just sort of dropped into that, and it was... It felt much less effortful than the return to my
great,
breath.
Beautiful.
But I think I'm a very spatially oriented person, so I think having that really helped me.
Good.
See.
I'm glad. Thank you. So often, as I said, the mind is focused on something, what we want in the world, what we don't want. And in doing that, sometimes what we don't notice is what it's like to be focused, what it's like to be caught up or concerned. So there's always two things going on, right? There's what's happening and how we relate to what's happening. But we're so involved with what's happening, we're not going to notice how we are in relationship to what's happening. And this mindfulness practice has a lot to do about noticing this other half of the equation, noticing how we are in relationship to it. And that also works with the awareness itself. Awareness itself is often not simple. That we bring awareness or mindfulness to an experience, the mindfulness itself has, sometimes we embed in it an attitude or a relationship. So for example, it might be, I can't do this meditation. And so this I can't is kind of like there, you know, feeling inadequate or insufficient in some way. And you're trying to do the practice, but there's kind of like this wind drag. So I can't really do this. This is hard. Or there might be an attitude of eagerness. Boy, I'm really going to do this well. I'm going to be the best meditator on the block. Or there could be some idea that hostility. And so every time you bring your attention to something new, it's like a sledgehammer. You know, you pounce on it. Or there could be an attitude of laziness. I'll get around to it. I'll get there. You know, you kind of go and pay attention to the breath, kind of go pay attention to the knees, but there's kind of a laziness to it. And so it's possible to turn the attention around and notice what it's like to pay attention. Is there an attitude? Is there a way in which that's done? Does that make some sense to you? Some sense? The reason why this is important is that... when we get back to the attitude that's embedded or comes along with how we pay attention, we're coming into something that's very intimate in who we are. It's very close. It's like we're getting really close deep inside. And it's often that's where we find the operating principle of how we operate in the world. That's the kind of the key. It's like a pivot around everything else is balanced or everything else comes out of. It's not so necessarily not easy to do what I'm suggesting. But once you can kind of get quiet enough and still enough in meditation to begin turning the attention around 180 degrees to notice what is the attitude that's there, things open up in a whole different way, and new layers of peace and happiness can be available. Make some sense? So should we try that? So taking an alert posture. And what's in terms of the alert part, it's often the spine, the vertebrae, to have them a little bit straighter, upright. Sometimes it's useful to kind of bring some attention to the vertebrae that are between your shoulder blades and see if you can have them be a little more alert, upright. Gently close your eyes. And then take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And as you exhale, see if you can let go of thoughts, concerns you have. Deep breath in, and as you exhale, simplify yourself to the simplicity of just being here in this body at this time. And then let your breathing return to normal. The future and the past you can only know through your thoughts, memories. But the present moment you can also know through the living experience of the present, the lived, conscious sensations, experience of being in a body, the lived way in which your senses take in sounds, smells, sights, sensations of your body. So we call it the living present, the lived experience, here and now. And with your eyes closed, sitting still, chances are that one of the biggest movements that are happening in your body is the movements of your body breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. And as you breathe in, see if you can stay there to feel the full length of the in-breath as your body breathes. And as you breathe out, kind of linger your attention with the full experience of breathing out all the way to the end. Letting your breathing be relaxed, but just feeling it, feeling what it's like for the body to breathe. For some people, the experience of breathing in is more clear than the experience of breathing out. It's more vivid. And because of that, sometimes the mind will have a tendency to wander off in thought during the exhale, especially the end of the exhale. If that's the case for you, just give yourself a little extra attention as you breathe out, so you stay there, so you're less likely to wander off. And then letting go of your breathing a little bit. Notice if there's any predominant sensations in your body. And if there is, gently, calmly bring your attention to acknowledge and feel. Notice those sensations. And notice if there's any, what your relationship is to the sensations, the attitude you have. And perhaps by acknowledging the relationship or the attitude, it might be easier to go back to the sensation in your body and just feel it as it is itself, directly. And then letting go of sensations in your body. Notice if there's any predominant emotion or mood, feeling sense in your body, in your attitude, any emotion. And if there is, gently acknowledge it. Then notice if there's a relationship, an attitude you have towards how you're feeling. Perhaps by noticing a difference between your attitude towards it and the emotion, you can be simple, simple presence for how you feel emotionally. Or it might be that thinking is what needs some attention. You might bring a few mindfulness now to thinking, acknowledging your thinking, seeing it directly as it is. Noticing there too, is there some relationship or attitude you have to thinking? For it or against it? Some judgments about it? And perhaps by acknowledging your relationship to it, your attitude, you can make it simpler and just see thinking for itself. You are not your thoughts. And then you can come back again to your breathing and feel your breathing. See if you can have a kind of intimacy, maybe from the inside out, of what it feels like to be breathing. And then as you do your best to be attentive to your breathing, stay mindful of your breathing, perhaps you can notice if there's some attitude or relationship or that's connected to how you pay attention. You pay attention reluctantly, aggressively. You pay attention kindly or harshly. You pay attention with a desire for something to happen. You pay attention with a sense of trying to control things. Or you pay attention with a sense that of being out of control. Pay attention to your breath and see if you can notice if there's anything extra that comes along with attention. And if you discover anything extra, any attitude or something, perhaps you can separate it out so you can help your attention, your mindfulness be really simple. Just simply feel, acknowledge what's happening with your breathing, breathing in, breathing out. Some people, when they listen to a faint sound far in the distance, they might close their eyes and let their thinking become really still and quiet, so they can really try to hear that faint sound. Without straining, see if you can let your thinking become really quiet, so you can, for a few moments here, feel intimately your breath, your breathing in, breathing out, as if it's something faint that you want to feel. And then in the last couple of minutes of the sitting, once again, see, like this time, let go of your breathing. But without paying attention to your breath, see if you can quiet the thinking mind. So you can sense and feel something really intimately. So let your thinking mind become quiet as you possibly can. And then see if you can notice what the background mood or attitude is for you. Is there a back, if you really quiet and look back at yourself, is there some fundamental or attitude, mood, relationship you have to life? It's there behind almost everything you do. And then to end the sitting, you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Feel your body. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So, those of you with glasses like I might know this regularly, But those of you who maybe don't have glasses, maybe have, you know, your windshield wiper of your car, you can start off having the glass being clean and clear. And you don't notice how slowly it gets dirty. And one of the, you know, and the windshield or the glass can be quite dirty sometimes, but you know, it's too close to see that. I mean, you can see it, but we're focused on looking out of the car windshield, seeing what the driving, what's going on out there. And so we don't notice all the bugs and the dust and the grime because we're so focused on the traffic and what's going on until someone points it out to you. And you say, oh, look at that. It's dirty. Or someone cleans it for you. And you go, wow. I had no idea that I was, you know, seeing through this haze. So it's possible to have something very present, but not to see it operating, see it's there. And as people get stiller and quieter in meditation, and we're talking not necessarily, you know, in a few weeks of meditation, but perhaps after a few months, a few years perhaps, part of the meditation, part of what we become aware of sometimes is the windshield, not the things of the world that we're always focused on. And then it's possible to notice that the windshield is dirty, or there's things there that interfere with our ability to see cleanly, clearly. And so there might be a very subtle attitude or a philosophy of life, a philosophy about what is, a belief, or an emotion that's always there, that might be very subtle. So it's not uncommon for some people to discover, for example, that there's a very subtle, all-pervasive fear that's always there in the background. But you usually don't notice it because you're busy living your life. But it's there, a little bit kind of shaping, coloring how we relate to things. Or there could always be a subtle attitude of desire, because if I get things, then I'll be happy. So it's always looking and trying to find what I can get. Or there could always be some idea that, a subtle idea of discontent. Whatever I'm experiencing is not good enough. The grass is greener somewhere else. Somewhere else, someone else has the right answer. I'm wrong. A very subtle kind of thing. I mean, it doesn't have to always be subtle, but very subtle. And as we get quieter and quieter, more and more peaceful, sometimes what we see is that how those things operate. And that's a great moment in meditation, because then you can kind of see the operating principle behind a lot of the behavior and thoughts and beliefs that you have. And then you bring attention to that. Try not to have any second arrows. Just notice it. Notice it. And then it might relax by itself. And when that kind of background attitude relaxes, then the experience of oneself, experience of being, becomes radically simple and very free. Usually very happy. It's a beautiful experience. And so that's part of the route that it often takes. So one of the things to notice at times in meditation is the quality of the attention itself, the quality of our way we're relating to the world. So the quality of the mind, the quality of attention. And the quality of attention belongs more to this background thing going on. So the quality of how we pay attention is more like the windshield that we don't notice. So what's the quality of your attention? You know, what's the belief that's connected to how you pay attention? What's the attachments, desires connected to how you pay attention? What are the emotions connected to how you pay attention? What's the quality of the attention itself? What's the attitude that comes with paying attention? What's the attitude that's operating? So some people find this very liberating to turn attention to focus on that. If this is just too esoteric for you, just follow your breath. Come back to your breath. Let go of your thoughts and come back to your breath. Keep it really simple. Or maybe the earlier week's instructions on the body or in emotions, that was plenty for you. That's fine. But just it's good to have heard these teachings that I told today, because some point, as you go on with this, they'll become relevant. And it's like your eyes will open up. Like, wow, it's a whole different game. I didn't realize. What's going on, you know? It becomes much richer. So, thank you. I hope that made enough sense to you. It was interesting, provocative perhaps. Next week will be a lot easier, simpler. And next week I'm going to talk more about a kind of overview of the mindfulness, simpler ways to deepen it, approach it. In particular, I'm going to talk about how to take the mindfulness practice and out of meditation and apply it into your daily life. And a very important part of mindfulness practice is how it's applicable, how it's useful in daily life as well. And so all the things I've been talking about as part of meditation are equally valid in things to practice with in daily life as well. And then daily life becomes a lot richer and more meaningful. So next week is our last week. There is a handout, this green sheet of paper, somewhere on the stage there. So I wish you all well. Thank you.